Leslie Dolphin. BBC
Radio Suffolk. If you've been with us in the afternoons for a while, you'll know that I say that pretty much every story you look at, if you look hard enough, you'll find there is a Suffolk link. And now it's been accepted that that is the case with the first gold that was discovered in Australia. Lynette Ramsey-Silver is an Australian historian and researcher, and she has proved that it was a descendant of hers from Aldborough, William Tipple Smith, who found the first gold in 1848. She joins us now from Sydney in Australia at a bedtime, I think, probably as well. Hello, Lynette.
Hello.
So thank you for staying up, assuming you're not a late night person anyway.
Oh, yes, I don't usually go to bed before about 1 o'clock, so it's fine.
Okay, cool. What's the weather like? What's it like with you at the moment?
Oh, fabulous spring weather. The gardens are full of blossom and it's heady outside. The jasmine and the wisteria is just fabulous.
You're going to make us jealous because we've just sort of turned, I think, from summer to autumn, so it's grey and miserable here today.
Oh, well, I won't tell you when it was 27 degrees here today.
I don't want to hear. So this, I mean, you wrote a book in 1986 called A Fool's Gold, didn't you? And this was telling the story of William Tipple Smith.
Yes, it was a book that overturned the existing story of gold discovery in Australia, which had been credited to a man called Hargraves, Edward Hargraves, who, as it turned out, was in a complete and utter fraud. He'd actually never found any gold himself. The gold he used to start the gold rush, he bought the borrowed £10 note.
Right. So, you obviously had a vested interest in this. So tell me William's story.
Well, he was born in Aldborough, and so was his brother, and they came out to Australia in about 1835. The first thing they did that was of great note was to set up the iron and steel industry in Australia in a remote bush location near Sydney, where there was amazingly a hill of very good quality iron ore. And Thomas, the brother, was a builder, and he was responsible for building the blast furnace. And William had the mineral brains, he's a mineralogist, and they set about making Australia's first iron and steel, and it was of fantastic quality. And samples were actually sent to Prince Albert's great exhibition at Crystal Palace in London.
Gosh, so they were pretty good guys, weren't they? How did the gold bit come about?
Well, Sir Roderick Murchison, who's one of your geologists, had predicted in as early as 1844 that gold might be found on the western slopes of the Blue Mountains. And William read about this in Sydney newspaper in 1847 and went off on a very long expedition and found enough gold and other minerals to prove Murchison was correct. So he wrote to him. Of course, you've got to remember that it took a whole year when you wrote a letter till you got the reply, because it was six months for the letter to get there. So he wrote and he sent across samples of gold and other things, and Murchison put them in the new Geological Museum in London in 1848. So this was all very well established. Murchison was very excited. He went off to speak to Earl Grey, who was the Secretary of State, and said that gold should be looked for in Australia, and couldn't get any interest at all. The Crown was not interested at all in fostering gold exploration in Australia. So he wrote back and told William this, and he thought, well, that's that. And then in beginning of 1849, people in Australia started to leave for California, where gold had been discovered, and he thought, well, maybe he would get a better reception. So he went off with some of his gold to the governor, who was basically, he ran the place, and said that he'd found this gold, and all he wanted was £500, not as a reward, but in compensation for these very long and difficult explorations, and was basically given the brush off. No one took any notice. And so he still bided his time. And 3 years later, Hargraves popped up and started a gold rush at the spot where he'd found this gold. And he always believed that Hargraves had inside information from a settler who'd seen William finding his gold at this particular spot. But that wasn't the case at all. Two young men whose uncle had seen him there were aware that gold was there. They'd found the gold. They had a relationship with Hargraves and told him they'd found this gold. So Hargraves came up from Sydney across the Blue Mountains with a borrowed £10 note, bought the gold they'd found for £10, went back to Sydney and told the governor he'd found a gold field and started a gold rush. Now, when that took place, he didn't have to do any digging. The miners did all the digging, and they took out millions and millions and millions of pounds in gold that went into the miners' pockets. And that was the reason why William Tipple Smith then became the victim of government corruption. And the reason was that Sir Roderick Murchison and other people had tried to get the authorities to reserve the mineral rights for the Crown, and no one had done anything. And the reason no one had done anything at our end here was because in Australia, if you own the land, you owned everything in it and on it. And to get the law ratified, the Executive Council had to do it, and they were very wealthy landowners, and they were not going to bring in a law that might deprive them of any goodies. So the mineral rights had not been reserved. This fellow called Hargraves had started this gold rush. The gold was going to the pockets of the miners and into the, instead of the coffers of the Crown, and questions were being asked about why nothing had been done. So this is where the corruption started. The governor, who knew full well that the gold found in 1848 had come from Australia, knew full well that they'd been informed about it in early 1849, changed the date of William's visit to the office in Sydney and made it 6 months later. And then with that time frame, that would have allowed him to have gone from Australia to California and come back with gold from California. And because he changed the date, he was then able to say that the gold that William Smith had bought in, had come from California, and therefore he had done nothing about it. So this was a lie invented. The lie was invented in a dispatch sent to Earl Grey in 1851, because all these questions were being asked about this gold rush. And Smith was told by the local government here that he's not entitled to anything. He'd go away. You wouldn't tell. He was accused of not wanting to tell his secret, I mean, which is just ridiculous. So he was now thwarted, and he was in a very poor position because in England he'd lost his right hand in some sort of accident in his mineral work, and he'd had basically a stroke in Australia, and he was paralysed down his left side and he could hardly talk. But he could get enough words out to write to his champion, Roderick Murchison. And he wrote to him and said, this is what's going on. I'm good for nothing. I'm unfit for any work. This is what the governor here is saying about me. Please, sir, do something for me. So Murchison went off and spoke to Earl Grey and said, we need to do something for this unfortunate man. And Murchison sent in chapter and verse, page after page after page, of what had actually been happening, that the gold had been found in 1848, that had been lodged in London. There was irrefutable proof that the gold field had been found and no one had done anything about it. And what happened was that Earl Grey had Murchison's information and from Smith on the one hand, which told the real story, and he had the lies written by the governor in 1851, saying that the gold had come from California, and basically that Smith had tried to defraud the government here of £500. He was total fraud, charlatan, and all the rest of it. Now, there's no way that Earl Grey could reconcile the two stories. So, as I've said to a lot of people, he did what all good politicians have done since Pontius Pilate. And he washed his hands of the affair and said had to be decided by the governor in Australia. Well, the governor in Australia had already decided what he was going to do. And he wrote a very curt letter to Smith, reprimanding him from going through indirect channels and basically affirming that he was going to get nothing from the government. And the shock was just this poor man who was so sick. He used up all this money. He'd done all this work. He'd done a great big mineral survey, and he was now being getting no help at all. He had another stroke and died.
Oh.
And 4 days later, he was dead.
That's
age 49.
That's terrible,
so,
isn't it?
And, of course, what happened was when these dispatches, a bit further down the track, when this dispatch became widely known, eventually, historians and people looked at it, the story went out that this William Tipple Smith, who'd come from Suffolk in 1835, was this charlatan and fraud, and he'd tried to defraud the government, and he bought gold from California, and his reputation was absolutely trashed completely. And the family suffered terribly because he was just seen to be this crook. And it's taken 170 years now to actually have his name officially cleared because two or 3 weeks ago, the New South Wales government and BHP, which is the the great big iron and steel colossus here in Australia, and keeping in mind that his iron works actually ended up being BHP, they paid for a beautiful headstone on his previously unmarked grave in a cemetery in Sydney because the family had no money to put one up. And it says categorically on that that here lies William Tipple Smith, discoverer of Australia's first payable gold and co-founder of the iron and steel industry in Australia. So it's 170 years since he had his very sad end, and it's 35 years since I wrote my book. So it's taken 35 years to actually get, you know, the wheels of government, which grind exceedingly slowly, to actually come out and put, not only do that, but put my money where their mouth is, and they've actually paid for it.
Wow.
Quite a good news story here amid all the COVID, and I did have some very interesting emails from people who read the story in the press to say, wasn't it good to have a good story where good eventually triumphed over evil?
Not so good for old William Tipple Smith, though, was it? I was going, poor man. And having left a decent legacy as well. And think, what descendant are you, Lynette?
I'm Thomas, the brother's three greats granddaughter and his great 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 grand niece. But the family lived in Alborough the boys were born there in 1803. William was born there, and the father was a lapidary and jeweller and lived in 64 High Street, Alborough, if anyone knows where it is. But in about 1850s, he moved up to Lowestoft where they had a second jewellery business. And he moved into 26 London Road, which I'm told on very good authority is now the pub called Joseph Conrad.
Oh, right.
On Station Square. So I've only seen pictures of it, but I did come to Alborough right back in the 1980s to see where it all happened. And I'd be very interested if anyone from Alborough's listening in, because apparently the father was quite a good jeweller, and we believe that there is possibly an example of something that was made by him in the Moot Hall Museum.
Ah.
And also anything local. But the name Tipple, of course, is fabulous because it helps you trace them with a name like Smith. Smith, I mean, of all the names you could possibly
Bill Smith, yes. not the easiest. So what was the dad called?
The father was William Tipple Smith too.
Okay, so if anyone's looking in the Moot Hall in Alborough, look for some jewellery from William Tipple Smith, maybe, and you'd love to hear more,
maybe.
Yeah?
Yeah, apparently amber and all sorts of semi-precious stones were there on the beach.
Yeah, you can...
The raw product was there, which is apparently why, you know, they were there. But the Tipples are just the maiden name of the grandmother. Her name was Jane Tipple, came from Norfolk, and married a fellow called Christopher Smith, and the Tipple ran through the family for a long time. On my side, it stopped my great-grandfather because he was teased at school for having a name that is synonymous with drinking. So that wasn't too, so it got kind of went out of popularity on my particular line, but we do have a rather recent addition on William's line who has Tipple in his name.
Oh, it's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. It's an amazing story. I always say there's a Suffolk link if we look hard enough, and there really was here. It's brilliant.
Yes, and people in Suffolk should be very proud that they produced the two brothers who are responsible for Australia's iron and steel industry, which is, you know, amazing to think just a little blast furnace in the bush built of sandstone eventually morphed into the great international colossus of Broken Hill Proprietary, which is the real name of BHP.
Fantastic story. Thank you so much, Lynette. I know you've got a website if people want to find out more of the things that you do as well, so haven't you? So lynettesilver.com.
Yes. Yes, just have a look on there. I'm into war, so particularly in Borneo, and I did trace the fate of the 641 British POWs who were completely wiped out in a little place called Sandakan in Borneo, and I wrote a very long book on that about the Australians and the British there, and I do have quite a bit of contact with people from the UK who sadly still write to me asking me, do I know what happened to Grandpa or Great-Grandpa, because the story just wasn't told, and it was so awful that the authorities really just gave relatives a minimum amount, and some of them have been waiting since the Second World War to find out exactly what happened to these people, and And Borneo is a very long way from England, so, you know, it kind of got lost in the post-war process because everyone was concentrating on Germany and that theatre. And these poor British soldiers and airmen who came to a terrible end over there in the jungle have been basically forgotten, pretty much in the UK.
So you have a million stories to tell. I can tell that via your website.
Oh, yeah, we could fill up a few programs.
I think I'll probably have to get you as a regular correspondent. Lynette, thank you. Have a good night's sleep when you get there.
Thank you very much.
Lynette Ramsey-Silver. So she is a researcher, author, as you heard, telling that story of William Tipple Smith and his brother from here, from Aldborough, setting up, discovering the first gold, as at last has been decided, but also busy. They founded the iron and steel industry in Australia. And Lynette there. If you want to find out more, have a look at the books she's written, lynettesilver.com.
The Sound.
The Sound of Suffolk.
And all the music you love.
BBC Radio Suffolk.